here?
No. Came here to work.
Well, I'll tell you, I saw this in gym.
Yeah, it's a long time. Yeah. Get back to work, board members.
We're fortunate.
Party's over.
Get work done out there.
Get work done right here. So we'll resume now our agenda, and the next item on this morning's agenda is an opportunity for public comment on RMAP planning and rulemaking. And we have a sign up, which is 2, 4, 6, 8 people have signed up. So again, I want to encourage everyone to abide by the 3-minute rule. And the first person to sign up is Jim Peters. Morning, Jim.
Good morning. My name is Jim Peters, policy analyst for the Northwest Indian Fish Commission. Thank you for the opportunity to speak in front of you today. As I testified in August, the tribes recognized the timber industry situation and supported the go forward on the RMAP extension at that time. With that support, we worked out an agreement that this board had approved. In that agreement, the tribes assumed that DNR would implement the recommended rule changes that was agreed upon and incorporate the conditions that the tribes had attached to that agreement. Would like to point out on page 5 of that, under the proposed RMAP extension recommendations, recommendation for rule change, there are some terms in there that, in both of the paragraphs, that talks about the new common reporting format. This was one of the main issues that the tribes had in the negotiations of going forward.
Excuse me, I'm not sure everybody has what you're talking about. You're talking about the recommendations from that board meeting, from policy to the board meeting?
Yes. Yeah.
I'm not sure. Is that in everybody's packet?
No.
So, okay. Yeah, everybody's looking for page 5,
okay.
Which is why I...
There was, you know...
I have a copy of it.
Okay. So anyway...
Is there a copy available for board members?
This was in your August board meeting packet from 2010, if you happen to have that.
Maybe not. But anyway, please continue, Jim.
This was one of the main issues that the tribes had at that time, was that it was very difficult for the tribes to track the completion of the RMAPs from owner to region to region, because there was no common reporting mechanism or format that we could follow from one region to the other or from one landowner to the other. So it was very difficult to be able to track that. And both the tribes and DNR needs this for us to be able to track the these RMAPs to make sure that we're on schedule. One of the staff reports that you guys received, I don't know if it was in August or even before August, that it was difficult to find out where individuals were, landowners were, and things like that, and we just needed to do that. We also need our conditions to be implemented in the rule or board manual as it was intended in the agreement. It is the tribe's intent that if the RMAP recommendations on rule change and the tribal conditions are fully implemented, that we will be able to support the final RMAP extension rules and as we go through this process. But as of right now, we have a little bit of concerns of how those rule languages are being in both the rule and also in the manual. And we've had to do a lot of work to support the industry in getting this rule extension with our tribes, and that we need to make sure and track, because of those conditions that we had placed on that, was that it was our understanding that there were appropriate rule language that needed to be in the rule, and then the rest of them were appropriate to be covered in the rule manual. And I think DNR is doing a better job just recently of incorporating some of those, but we're still are a little nervous that we've had to do so much work to make sure that those conditions and the recommended comments that we, our agreement that we had, are being implemented in the into this rulemaking process. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Jim. Next is Peter Heide.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the board. My name is Peter Heide. I work for the Washington Forest Protection Association. And I too am going to refer to the proposed recommendations that were forwarded to the board from the policy committee. So I'm sorry that you don't have those to look at, but we had a list of things that we were recommending, and unfortunately they haven't all been completed, but I just wanted to go down through the list and remind you of what it is and talk about each of them very briefly. The first one was to enact the rule change, and I think that's part of the action that's in front of you this today, is to forward the rule to a public hearing and then prepares for a decision on the rule either in August or November, depending on how the public hearings go, I suppose, or how what timelines and such work out. I'd like to say it is quite important that we try to complete work on that rule, certainly before the end of the year, hopefully at the August meeting. The second thing was to develop procedures to document progress and completion. And I think DNR is working. We've worked with the board manual. We've got some things put in that. I think that was in your, the draft manual's in your package. I think there's been a lot of work accomplished on that. We're still waiting for the final forms and such that DNR will be using, and they're putting a GIS system in place. It's not quite ready yet, but it's coming along nicely. The next two items were securing funds, one for determining the extent of work that needs to be done on small landowner lands, and the other was to supplement the WP program to move forward with fish passage. I think you all recognize how difficult it is to secure funds in this climate. We've been working with the DNR and some other stakeholders with the federal delegation, and talk about getting the cold shoulder. It's really happening so we've been unable to make progress on securing those funds. We're not going to stop, but we may have to look for some other avenues. Standardized data collection, again, DNR is working, I believe, diligently on this, and I think the next item is Clean Water Act assurances, and I think if we get all this together, we'll complete the Clean Water Act assurances that are necessary. And then the next item was long-term strategy for long-term adaptive management funding. And again, this is the funding issue. I think we have some vehicles to do that. I think what's lacking now is really getting together at the highest levels of the agencies to complete that work. And the last thing was we had agreed that we would work with the agencies and the other caucuses to get the watershed analysis recommendations for mass wasting recommendations and watershed analysis, and I believe that moving that rule, maybe it's adoption today, I can't remember where you are with that, but I think that one's moved along nicely. So we've all worked as hard as we can to get all of these recommendations in place, and I would urge the board to continue progress on rulemaking today and issue a request to for CR 102 to be issued on this rule package, RMAP rule extension package. Thank you.
Thank you. David Whipple.
Good morning again, Commissioner and members of the board. David Whipple, Department of Fish and Wildlife Forest Policy Coordinator. I'd like to provide a few comments relative to the RMAP rulemaking. You know, first of all, we support the RMAP rule extension. We were part of the policy group, and we continue to stand by that position. However, we're concerned with whether or not the RMAP requirements or elements will be required to be reported in the standardized format. Our interpretation of the policy recommendations that have been discussed so far is that for landowners to properly establish and report a new baseline, they need to report all of their RMAP issues, so to speak, that need to be addressed in that standardized format, and that gives us a picture of how much work has yet to be done. In other words, all RMAP issues need to be inventoried and reported in that common format, otherwise we won't know what the picture looks like. In gathering all of the information for the policy subgroup and ultimately forest and fish policy, the staff work group spent a great deal of time trying to figure out how much RMAP work had been done and how much work has yet to be done. And even though it was very difficult for them to do that and it took a number of months, they were able to make a definitive enough argument or make the case that landowners were making progress, and that was one of the big reasons why policy went ahead and approved and forwarded their recommendations to you as a board to move forward. So some important principles emerged from those policy discussions and are found in the recommendations. One is that new and amended RMAPs need to be reported in a manner which allows information to be rolled up to the state level to enhance understanding of whether progress is adequate at the landowner, region, and state levels. An expanded and consistent transparent system using compatible data collection methods and procedures will enable agencies, tribes, and landowners to more effectively track compliance and completion of RMAPs. And specifically, the Forest and Fish Policy recommendations contain a recommendation for rule change in that those landowners who seek an extension will file an updated RMAP using common reporting requirements with a summary of work to date and a proposed schedule adjustment to continue their work at an even flow plate, even flow pace to complete the work by the new deadline. And that, I think, is the crux of the issue. We kind of conveyed our concerns in the 30-day comment letter to the board, and we believe that the rule language may be able to be amended so that we're ensured that those recommendations from Forest and Fish Policy are implemented. We recognize that DNR has done a tremendous amount of work in a very short amount of time to get a lot of the pieces of this puzzle put together. Some of those pieces we have not seen yet, and in maybe our comfort would go up after seeing those. However, those other puzzle pieces are board manual and operational plans, which are not regulatory and may not or maybe even cannot be enforced. And
excuse
so,
me, Dave, could you summarize and
sure. I think in the take-home message here is that we don't want to find ourselves in the same predicament as we get close to the 2021 extension, should that take place, that we were a short time ago in not being able to determine whether or not we're going to make the new deadline. And so that's our main concern, and we believe that should be addressed.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Stephen Bernath.
Good morning, members of the board, staff, publics. I'm Stephen Bernath, Forest Policy Lead for Ecology and co-chair of the FFR Policy Committee. And I want to comment on the five-year extension. As both the co-chair, I've got 4 points. First, I was the co-chair of FFR policy during this negotiation. I fully participated, co-led along with Governor's Office and my co-chair Tom Robinson at the time, and the facilitator Jim Waldo. Mark Hicks also participates fully on the staff work to review the existing staff's status of RMAPs. Second, Ecology supports the RMAP five-year extension as per the policy recommendations, but all of the recommendations, including Appendix A, which I referred to heavily in the report we gave the board in August, which provided that there needs to be more transparency and accountability around review and reporting the work done by any landowner requesting an extension. This accountability needs to start with getting an updated RMAP that can be reviewed by the state, tribes, and interested parties. Determine if worst first and even full principles are being proposed by each landowner in each of their RMAP extension requests to be approved by DNR. To date, the requirements of the updated RMAP extension request has not been included in the materials that DNR has prepared, to my knowledge. The focus has been on annual reporting requirements. Without this information, there will be nothing to compare the annual reports against to understand whether landowners are on track overall to complete fish passage barrier removal and road improvements. Third, because the RMAP package is not complete as yet, including an incomplete board manual and an implementation plan that has not been presented, Ecology is concerned about performing public review on an incomplete package. Ecology will need to withhold the approval from a Clean Water Act perspective until the whole package can be seen and it is clear how all the pieces will fit together. Finally, four, we have spent almost a year negotiating the RMAP policy recommendations, including watershed analysis changes. We spent this last year negotiating the rule and board manuals for riparian open space and watershed analysis to a consensus package. When it was time to negotiate the rule package, including the board manual and implementation plan for RMAPs, it was a very short timeline put together, hence the incomplete and non-consensus proposal before you. We need to make sure this work is completed in a consensus manner. The landowners will be provided an extension that is worth millions of dollars to them and is critical to protecting fish and water quality. It would seem that getting the paperwork right out of the gate would be prudent. Meanwhile, DNR can continue to use its discretion working with landowners until this is completed. Please let myself or Mark Hicks know if you have any questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Kurt Bell Houston.
He's stuck in traffic and on his way still, so I don't know if he'll be able to make it. But he's hoping to maybe have time later on if possible.
Well, we'll look for him during this period. Miguel Perez Gibson. Morning, Miguel.
Morning. How's everybody? Okay, well, I'll try to do my part here among all the other speakers to tell you what the problem is. It's kind of hard to figure it out as you listen to all of what I just heard. Everyone's trying to give you a piece of it, but let me see if I can simplify it. When landowners said they needed an extension, one of the first things we did was put together a technical team. I was looking for Chris because he was part of it. Went out and took a look at all these RMAPs. Good news was a lot of good work's being done, so I don't want to lose that compliment or good piece of news. We've gotten a lot of road work done, a lot of stuff's being corrected. That was the good news. The difficult part was the processes didn't seem to be the same region to region. What landowners were submitting didn't seem to be the same. So there was concern about if we're going to how we're going to do this new extension, given this variety that was out there. We hired a facilitator, Jim Waldo. I'll admit I talked to him last night, but it was off record, so I can't say anything. It's off record that he wasn't getting paid. But we had a problem, and he came in and did a very good job of handling it. Because at one point, the Conservation Caucus was walking away from this, and then the tribes were going to walk away, and the issue that finally the tribes were considering walking away on, or they did, they may have walked away, which was this whole idea of reporting, and how we're going to make sure we got a process that we can believe in. And Jim did a really good job of trying to orchestrate that with all the tribes, but it was a key component. So that, we thought we adequately addressed in the document in August that we reached consensus on. What we're now talking about, I think it was just passed out to you. It's a proposal from policy to the board on what to do with this issue. And there's recommendations for rule change in that. So I think the question, this is where I was trying to get to for today, is to determine whether or not the proposed rule reflects what policy proposed in terms of what was supposed to be in the rule changes. Some of us don't think that it does. I think that's the issue. And that's and I think we could solve that today pretty easily, keep this moving along with maybe some sort of a short amendment, but it's going to take some discussion among you all to do that. Finally, I was reminded by my older compatriots that worked on this horse and fish process way back when, who were saying, Miguel, remember, we wanted all these RMAPs to go through SEPA. And there was an argument that they didn't have to go through SEPA because we were going to do a process that was such that it would jump that hurdle. So that's a little bit of saber rattling back in the background. If we can't seem to agree on how we do this, then there may be some questions about SEPA. I don't think we need to go there, but just a reminder, if you lose sight of how all these decisions get made historically. But there was taking SEPA off the table in order to do this in a way that we could acknowledge. So the concern is around reporting systems, new formats, and what does that mean? Not all landowners have electronic basis to do this stuff. What does that mean? But clearly, we don't have consensus anymore, and that's a problem, since we did have consensus in August, and we need to get back to that same place.
Thank you, Miguel. Adrian Miller. Morning, Adrian.
Good morning, Chair, Board members. I'm Adrian Miller with Longview Timber Corporation. I want to speak in support of moving this rule proposal forward. I really want to emphasize that this rule is a truly important demonstration from all of the stakeholders that the adaptive management process can be used to address economic concerns with a reasonable response consistent with science. And you know, many folks were acknowledging the fact that this was something unique and different earlier, and I do want to extend our appreciation for that. One of the pieces of this deal that really isn't part of the rulemaking but is of critical importance, and I want to highlight this as well, is the support of the continued process of developing an assessment and implementation for road upgrading with small landowners. And I want to let you know that our organization is committed to working with our federal delegation to help secure funding and, to the extent we can, provide assistance in, you know, helping figure out how one makes this assessment. Longview Timber is interested in taking advantage of this option on some of our RMAPs, and we are confident that the stakeholders will be able to work out the details of how this rule will be implemented in the next few months. I mean, what we're talking really about here is a data processing and format issue that I think could be achieved relatively quickly where we can come to some agreement. Lastly, what I'd like to mention is that, you know, a few months ago, the industry was sort of on the exact opposite side of this issue, faced with a rulemaking dealing with the mass wasting adaptive management prescriptions, where we had, you know, a rule process going forward, a board manual process going forward, and while in parallel, not always in sync with each other, one would creep ahead, the other would. And when it came time to move that rule forward to public comment, there was not an approved board manual. Not all the dots, I's have been dotted and all the T's have been crossed. But we felt, because of the trust we had established with all of the stakeholders, that it was appropriate to support that rule manual going forward. We're in a different position today, where we're here asking for that trust that we could actually accomplish the concerns that have been identified while this goes through the public process so that we don't unnecessarily delay the rule implementation.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Kevin Godby. Morning, Kevin.
Good morning. Chair, board members, my name is Kevin Godby with the Weyerhaeuser Company. I support this amendment moving forward, and I want to just give you a little update on kind of the economic conditions that the industry faces. For the first quarter, Weyerhaeuser Company reported net earnings of $99 million on sales of $1.6 billion. That's good news. The bad news is of that $99 million, $93 million were one-time earnings, basically land sales. So we netted $3 million on $1.6 billion in sales. Compared to a year ago, we lost $20 million in the same quarter. So there's a little bit of a turnaround, but you know, it's just barely break even. So the reality is that given this downturn, we have not been able to maintain a uniform schedule to meet our RMAP obligations. We're meeting our fish passage obligations. We're probably about 60% there, but the reality is we're gonna have to have an extension. And whether we grant one through the board or economic realities wind up putting us in the position of 2016 not being complete, our ability to fund this program largely tracks U.S. domestic housing. U.S. domestic housing is still about maybe 500,000 starts per year, 2 to 3 times off trend. We have an economic crisis. It's gotten a little bit better, but it hasn't resolved itself. And so this is the prudent thing to do, and I ask the board's support in doing that. And at the same time, in terms of this issue about data management, keep in mind the scale and scope of the program that we're talking about. There's tens of thousands of miles of roads in the forested environment. And if we're going to create a data management system, we're going to burn up all of the electricity on the central part of the state through hydro dams trying to keep these supercomputers aligned with all the information. The board manual correctly outlines the type of data that you should provide. If you look at D37, it just talks about annual summaries at sort of the large scale. Where'd you go? What'd you get done? How many fish passages blockages were removed? The approximate number of miles up the stream standard. That's the level of data that you need to make decisions. We cannot, in my words, kind of provide needle length and bark thickness analysis of every tree in the world. We can't provide information about every mile of culverts that have been passed or ditches that have been improved. We have to have a reasonable amount of data. And so to some degree, the stakeholders have to live with a little uncertainty, and that the amount of data has to be relative to the size and scope of the problem. We've been providing it. It seems to be sufficient. We're willing to work with stakeholders, but there's a limit to our capacity to provide a high level of detail. And I think a limit in government's capacity to process that and be able to make decisions on it. So let's be reasonable at our expectations. I think the board manual strikes the right balance, and with that, I'd be glad to take any questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Kevin. So that completes our opportunity for public comment on RMAP planning. So I think it's appropriate then to get some report from the staff on the RMAP process. Mark and Julie, please.
Good morning, Commissioner and members of the board. In your packets, we prepared the status of the recommendations and the DNR operations plan. It's an update of where we're at. I believe you just got handed out the original recommendations that were given to the board last August. The board accepted these recommendations from policy, and then staff began to put together all of the paperwork and the rule and the board manual in preparation to request the board to initiate rulemaking.
Excuse me, Mark, that there's a fine point there. In February, then, did the board approve that preliminary language?
At the August meeting, the board accepted accepted policy's recommendations for rulemaking, board manual development, creating an operational plan, and all of the other elements that policy outlined in order to create a complete package to address RMAP issues. And that would include as was testified earlier, the request for funding to assist small forest landowners in the FFF2P program. This would be funding from the federal government as well as counties who are also very cash-strapped, but in the county elimination of fish passage barriers on their roads as well. It also addressed the policy's desire to convene a meeting of principals to address RMAP issues and to garner full support from all of the TFW community towards this rulemaking.
Okay, thank you.
What we've done in this, in the update, is we broke down the recommendations into categories, starting with the rulemaking category, and we briefly summarized. So with the recommendations that we've just handed out and the update that we've done, you'll see the parallel. Starting again on page 5, now that you have them, the original recommendation, and then looking at the update you've just given me. So it A is the recommended rule language, then it goes into the board manual, and then it talks about the operational plan. So, and with the recommendations came what we've now called Appendix A, which were the additional elements that policy agreed to incorporate as part of the proposal, and those are attached to the recommendations, and it starts with A1 to the, I guess, page 10, right after page 9 of the recommendations. So what we've done here is, in the program response, is kind of a summary of what you've seen. It's not kind of, it is a summary of those elements that need to be incorporated into rule. And again, it's the 5-year extension, or for up to 5 years to July 2021. Establish a process to request extension, including the requirement to submit a revised RMAP. Establish a process for stakeholder review, which brings in the 120 days. And notification to stakeholders by DNR of all changes to approved RMAPs. This rule language was, as we developed the rule language, we met with all the stakeholders individually, and we also took the rule language to policy and gained approval in both instances. So the rule language presented to you today, we did work with stakeholders and policy as a whole. One thing I'd like to point out too is that, and Julie will address this more in the operational plan, but you were also handed out when, as part of the compliance monitoring forms. These are the forms, the current draft of the forms that DNR is developing to accompany the RMAP process. And on the very first form, the request to extend the completion of road maintenance and abandonment plans, it asks for the extension period, and then on the and it emphasizes the 120-day time frame. It also, on the second page, states that the landowner needs to attach the following forms: the extension summary, map showing work to be completed and designation, identification and prioritization for RMAP extension requests, and routine maintenance practices for forest roads. The very next form on the RMAP extension summary, it indeed asks for all of the information that will give people the opportunity to review the amount of work that is left to be done from the date that the extension request is asked for. This is real important because in rule in 051, in subsections 3-6, and this is on the second page of the update that we've given you, we've summarized, we're actually starting on the first page at the bottom. This is a summary of the information that all landowners have to provide in order to have a complete RMAP. It's in rule now. We've gone one step further, and we're asking them to also present in a summary in this form so that we people are telling us up front, and for that matter, all stakeholders will allow or will be allowed to review the work that's left to be done. Please keep in mind that the board manual is not rule. Instead, it provides guidance to the rule. So if you follow the board manual, and a discussion about the forms will be in the board manual, if you follow the board manual, then you will meet the rule. So these forms will be housed in the board manual, or at least referenced in the board manual. Right now, we're referencing because the forms may change. It is true that we're still in the process of developing the operational plan to fully implement our maps. There were a lot of issues that needed to be worked out. It is true that there were some inconsistencies between the DNR regions and how they were implementing the program. But it's also true that every RMAP that has been approved had to meet the conditions in 222-24051, which is to meet all of the requirements and elements 3 through 6. The policy recommendations called for information to be provided within the board manual. Under normal rulemakings, the board approves proposed rule language to undertake a rulemaking process on it. And then at the conclusion of that, we present the draft rules for the board's review for adoption as permanent rule. At that time, the DNR traditionally prepares the board manual in consultation with stakeholders to provide the guidance that people can follow in order to implement those rules. We're making an exception on this because of the fact that policy recommended items to be addressed in the board manual. So this rulemaking is a little different than others in that we have presented to the board a draft board manual for people to review while they're looking at the proposed rules. That way, in your review, you can see that we are indeed implementing those recommendations that should be placed in the board manual. We've also, in the case of our maps, we've also filled out the SEPA, and we've made the SEPA available for the public to review in addition to the proposed rule, the accompanying documents, which would be the cost-benefit analysis and SBEIS, as well as a draft board. So with that, I'll let Julie talk about the operational plan.
Okay. Just to provide some background, the intent and purpose of an RMAP is just to bring all forest roads that are not to the current standard being the forest and pitch rules that were passed back in 2001. In a broad sense, there's basically four broad buckets, classifications for roads. We have roads that are that meet standards, we have roads that do not meet standards, we have roads that are either abandoned or are being planned to be abandoned. We also have orphan roads. Those are the four main categories that we track and that we require landowners to provide information to us on when they submit their RMAP. For the extension, actually, let me stop. I want to address, you heard during the public comment, there were a number of folks that had talked about concerns, inconsistencies, non-standardized processes for RMAPs. And I want to acknowledge those comments. That was true. The program crossed all six regions. We had not been consistent with how we were identifying the various reporting elements. The reporting elements that I'm referring to, and when I state reporting elements, I'm talking about the annual accomplishment summary that comes out on an annual basis. These are the reporting elements, total number of fish passage barriers identified, number that have been removed, approximate number of miles open. That's what I'm talking about when I talk about reporting elements. But across the six regions, We were not consistent in how we identified those, how we collected information from landowners on those, and certainly how we reported those. That has been addressed. The specialists, the RMAP specialists within each of the regions, we've gotten together and we have corrected those inconsistencies on a go-forward basis. That those things should not occur in the future. The other actions that we've taken and based on feedback that we've heard was our transparency and our sharing of information to stakeholders. That's another area where we have identified and have created areas for improvement in order to be far more transparent in sharing information. We have developed a database. Actually, the database has been expanded upon. The specialists had a database that they tracked fish passage barrier information in. That was done on a region level. We are currently in the process of creating that particular database to a statewide database, and it will be, once it's complete, made available to stakeholders for as part of their review and process. So we'll allow folks to identify and see where the barriers are located. You can reference it to a map and better find the locations and the numbers. The database will also be set up to provide a reporting capability, so folks can query and find out of the total number of barriers that were identified, how many have been fixed currently, and then how many are yet to be completed. So those are a couple of steps that we've taken as a program that will apply to all landowners with RMAPs, irregardless of an extension or not. For those landowners that are going to be asking for an extension, Mark pointed out to you, you have the form here, and I just want to emphasize these are very draft still. We have some wordsmithing and possible opportunity to combine a couple of these forms down to one. But as we have right now, we have six forms. In the past, these have never been required for a landowner to actually use these specific forms. As long as they've provided the information that we've required. But we are going to be moving to a standardized form in order to improve our ability to stay consistent and also help not only the our internal staff, but stakeholders and landowners to be able to make sure that the data is in a manner that is easy to track and compare through time. I just wanted to run through a few of these, spend a little bit extra time on them. As Mark pointed out on the second sheet, this is the extension summary. This is where you're going to be able to see information based on what the landowners have. And this is, I should point out too, that the first four forms that you have are going to be strictly for those folks that are asking for an extension. So the first one is the extension request itself. The second one is an extension summary. This is where you'll find information on what was the total work identified in that RMAP, what's been completed, and what is needed to go on a go-forward basis. That will be covered by the extension time period. To address work first, the assessment. This is a form that we've always had. We've used it since the beginning. We're just renaming it to the designation identification prioritization for RMAP extension request. But the main body remains pretty much the same. And this is to allow the landowners for that area that they're requesting an extension on that has yet to be completed to apply the worst first principles and make sure that how they're addressing their work over that extension period, that they're going to be focusing on those areas that are the worst first. So this data will be part of the information. The last sheet that is specific to those requesting an extension, this again is the same that we've had since the very beginning. It's the storm maintenance strategy for forest roads. this hasn't changed. The folks will be asked to resubmit this for those for that area that is part of the extension. So again, we'll have that updated information. The next form, this is the RMAP annual accomplishment and planning report. This is where you're going to see the far more detailed information with regards to what work is being planned for the coming year, as well as reporting on what work was accomplished in the previous year. This is essentially, it's very similar to what we've used in the past, but we've made some modifications. We're adding a couple of reporting elements. One reporting element that we had not reported on previously is total number of fish passage barriers identified as a whole in the very beginning. We've always reported on total number of fish passage barriers that have been fixed, total miles, approximate miles of fish passage barrier open, but we've never provided that other data element in order for folks to do a comparison to really be able to track even flow. So we're adding that, as well as an additional data element on total number of forest roads identified needing improvement. So we've always tracked total number of miles that have been improved, but we've never had a data source that you can compare that to in order to help you track even flow work as the landowners progress. So that's this form. The last form, this is where you're going to see the specific information of work that's been identified in the RMAP. This is significantly different than in the past. And again, this is not just for those folks asking for an extension. This is going to be for folks that are going to meet the 2016. It's a go-forward basis reporting format. It's significantly different in that there's some additional data reporting elements on here that have not been asked for before. Some of them will not be required. An example would be, as you'll see, lat and long. Some landowners have been providing us that information, not all. This is a data element that we would like to capture. It's not going to be required. Not all landowners are capable of obtaining this specific information. So the legal for an identification on the ground location is still on here. We've added a number of data fields to this. Essentially, if you were familiar with the old forms, Form A, it's kind of Form A on steroids. It's just we have just really added a number of different columns. And we've also made it to where it's a uniform form that can be used, it will be used for identifying what work is to be done in the coming year, but it's going to be the exact same form that folks then use to report what work was completed. We've added some data columns on the far right to be able to track when was the work scheduled to be done, and then when was the work actually completed to be done. This is in my mind, a huge improvement over what we've had in the past, being able to be far more efficient on the tracking of work that needs to be done, as well as comparing to what actually did get done. A lot of times in the past, what our specialists have had to deal with is getting paperwork coming in, identifying what the work plan is, and then a separate set of papers coming in to say, hey, this is what we accomplished, and then folks having to go back and forth and do a cross comparison. This is going to alleviate that need for the comparison, as well as some but not all information that's on here. I mentioned earlier the fish passage barrier. We currently have a GIS data layer that is tracking those locations where they have been identified, the ones that have been fixed. This will give us the opportunity, this format, and it's the other reason why it's so important to have this standardized format, is that we can take this, and whether a landowner submits it to us with paper, they could submit it to us electronically using an Excel, this is an Excel spreadsheet, or they can provide it to us GIS spatially. We have three different ways that we can accept information. If we get that information from landowners either in a GIS spatial format or an Excel spreadsheet electronically, we can get that transferred over into the database, the GIS database, very easily. If it comes in on paper, what we can commit to do is any work relating to fish passage barriers, we will continue to hand input that information into the GIS lake. So what we'll have available for our stakeholders for review, certainly our copies of of the paper reports analysis that comes in, but we're also going to be having an electronic database that will be accessible strictly to stakeholder, the reviewers of our maps, so they can have that as an additional tracking and reporting tool.
Question, Tom?
very pertinent to this. This is hot off the press, right?
This is really hot off the press.
So the folks that testified this morning haven't seen this photo?
No, I don't believe they have. I know that this was distributed to those folks that were part of the board manual
group. The board manual group got it on Monday.
And yesterday. And it's also circulating with the RMAP specialist. So it's been a very, very small group release, but we're wanting to get it out. We're wanting to get feedback. So again, essentially, this is what you can expect as a final product. But certainly, there's, I think, some opportunity. Again, we can reduce two of these forms into one, do a little bit of wordsmithing here and there. But this should give you a really good idea of the direction that we're going, and then the type of information that we can expect to see.
Just a quick question. Thank you very much, Julie and Mark. And just a question for both of you you run these programs from your perspective. Julie just did a great job of highlighting the need for standardized forms, reporting requirements. So if you're already putting them out there, making them required seems like a logical step, but from your perspective, why is there that disconnect? Is it because these are going to be available to everyone, encouraged strongly to be used, but without, again, specifying in rule, I'm at a loss for.
So my expectation based on conversations not only with our specialists, the folks that have been working one-on-one with landowners, but I've also met with a number of landowner reps. The feedback on this has been very positive and very supportive with regards to that there's benefit not only to our staff and stakeholders, but there's also benefit to landowners in order to to embrace kind of a more standard format. I'm not hearing or sensing any need that it has to be put in rule to put that specificity into rule. What we've developed, it seems that folks have been very responsive and very willing to participate in using these particular forms on a go-forward basis. I think folks are recognizing that the end goal is getting closer and the need to be able to demonstrate even flow. Landowners have a lot at stake, and they want to make sure that they can help tell their story of achieving that as well. By going to these forms, it's certainly going to help them be able to do a better job of doing that. Not only that, but then those of us that are having to monitor and evaluate and review to get there. Okay, did that answer your question?
Yeah, no, it helped. Okay. Yeah.
Other questions? Yes, Norm.
This form you just referred to, the last form A, last page in the handout, appears to address fish passage issues, but I'm not sure if it addresses other RMAP type issues that could be worked on. Is there a different form, or would they all just meld into this one thing?
They'd all go on this form, and Norm, thanks. For Gubbershot, thank you.
Norm, thank
you. This was an example, but certainly on the very bottom you can see that there's they've got some identifiers. It's under the status values, right? And so what you would expect to see under the status column, you could see pertaining to fish passage, you could see water sediment delivery issues, water interception. So there's specific codes at the bottom, and then the landowner would just fill out whatever code applies. And I, you know, again, these codes have been with us since the beginning. These are pretty standard on a carry forward basis. So really what we've done here is we've just added a number of reporting columns and standardized this in order for us to be able to do a better job of hopefully getting, we want to get as much information into that GIS database as possible. And this is our pathway towards doing that. But this is for everything, not just Fish Passage. At point to note as well, just on the far end, we've got a column that states RMAP obligation. This is typically going to be a yes, but there are certainly circumstances out there. Life of pipe call would be an example of when you wouldn't necessarily need to upgrade a pipe, provided that it's functioning. It could be. And under today's current rules, it may be undersized based on if you were to do a new construction. But that pipe may be functioning just fine. It's part of the assessment that's done. So it may get what we term a life of pipe call. Then the specialist would actually go in there and manually change that to an N, from a yes to an N. But more likely, these are going to all be yes columns. But there are some examples. Another one that came up was a landowner who had a pond. It was an impoundment due to a road construction. It was providing fabulous habitat for fish. And so it was decided, DFW, Ecology, and DNR had gone out, and I believe in this case it was down in the Nacelle area. We had kind of an ID team. It was decided that it was best to leave that pond there for the habitat that it provided, rather than changing out that pipe, which you would have lost the pond for. So again, there's those types of exceptions. Those will be tracked on here as well. And that's going to be helpful for stakeholders when they're out reviewing. And if they see a pipe, they've got a question about it, and say, well, gee, why hasn't this been fixed? They'll be able to pull up and see specific comments addressing why it wasn't, or anything that's pertinent. So again, we've made a number of changes with the hopes of being far more transparent with our stakeholders to help them understand what we understand based on the interaction that we've been having directly with the landowners. So I'm really excited about this form. And since I'm very proud of the work that our specialists have been doing with the landowners and stakeholders on developing these. It's been great work, and I think it's going to really make a huge difference for us.
Any other questions for staff? Yes, Dave?
So I appreciate the work that's been put into this, and it's clearly needed because when we try to track, when our people in the field are trying to track how people are doing with our RMAPs, they haven't been able to do it the way that the information has been collected to date in many areas, and it's using that annual reporting mechanism and it hasn't been working for us. So with what we're trying to do with approving rule language, we felt like the rule needs to specify, or at least have language that then gets rolled into the board manual, and like Mark, you said the board manual implements the rules, so the rule, in our view, needs to have some language specifying standardized reporting requirements. And also, with respect to the RMAPs themselves, it should be clear in the RMAPs what the landowners need to report at the end of the year so you can match up that information to be able to track whether landowners are meeting their obligations or not. So that was the issue we were having about wanting to have some additional language in the rule, that we thought that was part of the direction that came out of the policy recommendations to the board, and so we were you know, a little bit concerned that we don't think that that's been met. Maybe now it's kind of moving quickly here.
Yeah. So let me ask Julie. Does this these forms that you have just reviewed for the board, does it accomplish basically what the concern is?
I believe it does, Commissioner. There's a couple of things that have been going on that I think have contributed to folks' frustration and feeling of lack of being able to receive information. I touched on it a little earlier, and so did other folks, right? I mean, the program hadn't been consistent, so we were reporting on information, collecting information differently, and reporting it differently. That causes confusion. And trying to get a sense of, okay, exactly where things are. Not having some data elements that really provide for baseline comparison. So I mentioned earlier fish passage barrier information as well as road length that was identified needing to be improved. Those are things that we're bringing forward as well to help folks get a better sense and understanding of how well folks are doing in tracking with regards to the even flow. Transparency, you know, in the past what we've done is reports come in, we make copies and we ship them out. You know, we ship them out to the stakeholders that we're, you know, aware of for the respective regions. But as far as having any meaningful conversation or follow-up on a consistent basis, we weren't always doing that. And so that's another area where we are making some marked improvement and changes to how we interact and share information with folks. The other is the database that I mentioned and having it. It's going to be on an external web, it's an external web-based system that's going to be set up. And that's going to be another way that folks are going to be able to review information, timely information, and as well as being able to have a standardized format. That's the other thing that's been problematic, not only for our reviewers, but even for our staff in trying to sort through data, is having different forms. Is trying to figure out, okay, on this form, I know I'm looking for this data, and here, you know, it's this is where it's laid out, but this person approached it slightly differently. And it's trying to figure out where exactly they've got it in relation to, you know, this landowner and that landowner. If our folks are having a hard time and they do this on a regular basis, I could just imagine what stakeholders, you know, are trying to struggle with not having the same day-to-day experience. But making those changes, I think, are going to address your concerns and the folks that you represent as well by having these consistent forms, standard forms, doing a much better job with being transparent and sharing data, as well as coordinating information. One of the other requirements that we've sent out to the region staff is that they are to create a stakeholder outreach plan specific to their region and specific to their stakeholders. That's been part of a performance objective that the program has sent out. So in addition to this work here, we're also working on other fronts with staff out in the regions to be able to develop better mechanisms for sharing that make sure that we're meeting stakeholder needs. We've never taken it that far before, but we're trying to make sure that we understand what each stakeholder needs as far as the information and how best to share that information, and then making sure that we're continually having an open, you know, communication, open opportunity for that exchange.
So I think, Dave, if I can sort of add to these comments, I think what you see before you is a very thoughtful effort to meet your concerns. And I think it's obvious that if you try, I don't want to discourage you from it entirely, but if you try and put all that into rural language, we'd be here all day. That it's a very complex effort and a very complex document that's been created. I think staff has done a very good job of addressing your concerns, and hopefully it meets your concerns.
Can I just add really quickly, Commissioner, to your thought? And that's exactly right. But the other part of it is that if we were to put this specifically in rural, if we needed to make any modification or change, improvement to it, It would be very difficult because of the process that we'd have to go back through in order to make those changes. So that's another reason why we would rather not, because this does get down into such specifics that we want to be able to have that flexibility to get it out on the street, get it working. And then if we need to make some modifications or changes to it, we'll be able to do so far more responsive in a timely manner. If it were in rule, that would be a completely different process that we would have to go through.
Dave?
Hi, Commissioner, thank you. I try to find the issue here, really. I understand you can't put the whole form in the rule. That would be silly. We've never done that. But in the rule, making whatever the board manual says in terms of form, making that mandatory or having to use that form and specifying that, that would give the assurances that whatever the rule is or the board manual is, and you can change it up, at least you're using a standardized format. And I think that would take care of the concerns. It would be fairly simple to just reference the board manual without all the detail and create that linkage. I don't see where the controversy is, because that seems fairly simple and straightforward to me, and would assure everybody that this good work here in the form is going to be used routinely, and that would take care of it. In my estimation, I don't see a problem with that. Does that create a problem from a staff standpoint?
There are a number of rules that reference the board manual, so it's something that can be done. if I could to address Board Member Herrera's comments too, in the board manual it does stress communication. One of the concerns I heard from the tribes is the lack of information from which to make reviews or participate in the annual reviews and things of that sort, which is one of the problems that we found, is that there was some inconsistencies in how the annual meetings were scheduled and people were made aware of them. That has now been added to the board manual, the kind of the communication process where for example, in E3.3 of the draft manual, it says the Department of City Ecology, Wildlife, Affected Tribes, and Interested Parties have the opportunity to review existing approved RMAPs, revised RMAPs, and early communication. It's stressed in the board manual. And later it states that DNR in consultation with ecology, fish and wildlife, tribes, and other interested parties will review the progress on an annual basis. So there's an effort in the board manual to outline a very strong system of communication between all the stakeholders and the landowners in both the extension request and on every year's annual review of work accomplished and work proposed. So, and then it also references the forms that landowners will use to document both the work accomplished and work planned on an annual basis.
Darren?
Let's see if I can make a sharp point on this. So we have standardized forms for both landowners seeking an extension request and for annual reporting. That was where we had always intended to go and where we are going. As Julie mentioned, there's still some fine tuning to be done to both of those sets of forms, but that's the direction we were going. Now what you've heard today is a request for a standardized RMAP. We were not going there. And a standardized RMAP that reports in a standardized fashion a finer level of detail. That's not where we were going as board staff, and that's not how we interpreted the recommendations. So that's the crux that I think the board has to wrestle with. What we have provided to you today is a standardized way to track implementation of RMAPs on a go-forward basis, whether there's an extension request or not, and a standardized way to establish a baseline for those that do request an extension. But it's a fairly high level. We're focusing the detail work out on the ground. We want our folks prioritizing that rather than handling paperwork and creating data systems, although we have created a data system that
we think will help not only us, but stakeholders better review progress. So that's where we went as board staff, and something that we thought would address the recommendations, would help improve the system, and probably most importantly, be something that we could handle. So going beyond that or changing direction is not something we had planned for, but certainly are willing to engage in discussion with the board when we get to this next topic and determine where is the best path forward on this.
All right. Thank you for that clarification. Does that help everybody understand? Sherry.
Dave, I just want to mention the fact that there's only been one form that's been put in rule, and that's the Forest by Perinisement Program contract. And I think you could ask anybody in the Small Forest Landowner's Office that it has been a detriment to allow the flexibility that is needed. When you put a form in rule, then that's what you get. And there's no change if something's wrong or right. So let's learn from that one. That's a very good deal to do.
Dave? You know, I wasn't asking to put a lot of detail into rules. As a matter of fact, I have a proposed amendment we would like to consider, and you can see in the highlighting it's not much. So I would like to distribute that to the board.
Well, can I ask you to wait just a minute until we consider rulemaking? So we're not quite to that point in the agenda. We will be soon, Dave.
I, however, would be interested in seeing what Dave is proposing just for the purposes of discussion, because it might clarify things. So I, for one, am not clear yet as to whether or not the issues that several stakeholders raised in public comments, including, you know, staff of important resource agencies and the Environmental Caucus, if those issues have been addressed by what DNR staff has proposed. And so if what Dave is proposing, at least in concept, can be discussed, and we can have a discussion about whether that's getting at everybody's concerns. And if it is, then it seems like, you know, moving forward with rulemaking would be very smooth. And so maybe it's just the concept that Dave is thinking about. Does it get at the core of everybody's concerns? And if so, it seems it would simplify the discussion later.
Well, let me just ask Dave. Hearing Darren's reply about the distinction between an annual report and a general RMAP detailed report, which of those two is your concern?
I think both.
So why don't you go ahead and just read what your, or tell us a sense of what your proposal is.
Copies.
Pardon?
I have plenty of copies.
Well, go ahead and distribute them. I think one thing I'm concerned about is the additional workload, if it's needed or not. That's one of my concerns with a division authority depleted in terms of staff, contemplating taking on significant, serious additional workload.
Can I follow up on that? Dave, I didn't hear you say that what you're seeing here in terms of forms is bad. In fact, it may be what you're looking for, but you're looking at creating a link to the rule here. So it may not be additional work at all, mm-hmm. since they're already doing it. I mean, is that right? Or
no,
are you thinking about something
different? I don't think it
needs
to create a whole additional workload. There seems to be a difference in my opinion here, but I think we need to talk that too.
So, Darren, would you just comment on, has this commonly been done in the past, where there's a link between the rule and essentially the board manual?
Absolutely, there is. Excuse me. And I want to be clear, we're not opposed to referencing standardized forms in the rule, not at all. But if you look at what's in front of you on the piece of paper, it is referring to the RMAP itself, a standardized RMAP. That's our read of this language.
versus
standardized forms for reporting, for requesting extension, and for reporting.
So is that your intent, Dave, to create a standardized RMAP?
No.
So then this language could go in, say, sub 8, which is about annual accomplishments, or we could also include something in, if you look at your packet, the proposed rule in your packet, we're already drifting over to the next agenda topic, I'm sorry.
We are.
Commissioner. Well, where the new language was added into rule under sub 8, there's probably a place in there where we could insert this, where it would be clear that it applies to the extension and to accomplishments and planning, rather than the entire RMAP itself.
Does that sound acceptable? Excuse me, Board. We're treading on thin ground here. I'd like to kind of close the staff part and then move into the rulemaking so that we can address this issue directly. That with your approval?
Can I ask one question while staff is still involved?
They're not going to go. They're not going away.
Okay. because I think it might help others other than just myself. But so there's what's required in an RMAP, and then there's what's required in the annual reporting of RMAPs. And what I'm not grasping is why are those two things different? Aren't what's required in an RMAP, doesn't that serve as the foundation for the information that's used in the annual reporting? If you can just elaborate on that, that would be great.
It does. It serves as the foundation. So the RMAP itself is a much higher level plan. When we get into the accomplishment reporting and the work planning, that really gets down into the finer details of exactly what's going to happen as part of that plan. So think of the RMAP as just kind of being the big umbrella piece. We don't expect folks, we wouldn't want folks to get down into the nitty-gritty because it's a plan for a period of time, right? And over time things can change, so we wouldn't want that level of detail, but where the level of detail then comes in and it builds upon that RMAP, that foundation of the RMAP, is the work plan that's provided. Landowners come forward and say, okay, over this next year, here's what I'm planning on achieving. It's tied back to my RMAP, but it's giving far more detail. And then a follow-up happens after that, the following year, which is the accomplishment reporting. And that basically then reviews back what had been planned as a work plan. Did you meet it? And it could have changed. There might be some modifications, additions, or maybe they weren't able to get to everything, and then that then becomes part of a future work plan. So but the details, the real specifics are in those two plans, not in the RMAP itself. Did that help?
Yes. Yeah. Norm, did you have
Commissioner, if I may, I could perhaps help on this question.
Sure.
When the RMAP requirement first came into place, there were required elements. Mm-hmm. There was not a required format.
Okay.
And so every landowner out there, and including sometimes different formats by the same landowner for different areas, existed. GPS was not widely available at the time, and it was not very accurate at the time. And so the locations of various inventory issues may have been put on a piece of paper on a map, they may have been recorded with Latin lawn, or it may have been done in some other fashion. All of that information is there, but the inventory, which is part of the RMAP, is huge for every individual landowner. I can't even imagine what it must be like in the region. They've got to take up bookshelves full of space. So to go back in and have to redo every RMAP out there and every inventory for every landowner in order to comply with a standardized format for the RMAP and for the inventory would be an enormous task. Going forward, we have all those tools available, and we would know going forward that from day one, for every bit of work that I have to do, this is the information that I have to record. That's really simple. We can make.
And you're open to having
we
that.
We can meet that
we've talked
we
about.
We can meet that very easily.
For standardized.
But to go back and retrofit
Right. I wasn't.
Dozens of RMAPs inventories, as sort of is in the question, would take us longer than between now and 2016 to get done.
Okay.
It took us 5 years to build those plans in the first place. That's how much time we had. And my guess is it would take us darn near that much time to retrofit them all to meet a standardized
But like format. You said, moving forward is a different...
Moving forward okay. is not a big issue.
Okay.
That's the distinction that certainly I would bring to this discussion.
Thanks.
Thank you, Nora. Dave?
So we weren't looking to standardize RMAP. Everybody's got RMAPs going to be different, and many companies probably have a bunch of different RMAPs. They all have different inventories, tasks that are identified as needing to be done over a certain time period. So what we were more looking at was for each of the RMAPs should be able to at least identify what each of the elements that needs to be accomplished is. So if we had that, then in the annual reporting, you would look at what they reported that they got done versus what was identified as needing to be done, and we would then have comfort that we're
actually making
progress. Right, so now with an annual report, it's what do we compare that to? That linkage to us doesn't exist right now.
Well, if I understand that what staff has been saying, it addresses that issue exactly. Mm-hmm.
So in the form packet, this was the second form, the RMAP extension summary, and that's really the intent of this form. And
so you're proposing a new form right now?
We're proposing, right. So the expectation will be is that the person requesting the extension will identify what their entire RMAP was, what was completed, but most importantly, what's yet to be completed. So we'll have that as a baseline to then carry forward the next years to track back against and compare them. But again, this is very high level information, but it'll give you the fish passage, you know, information. It won't break out the specific, you know, how many cross drains do I need to add, but it will give you how many road miles are yet to be, you know, brought up to forest, you know, practice standards, right? So you'll have kind of a big, you know, big picture idea of what still is remaining. And then in those accomplishment reports and the work proposed, proposals, you'll get more of the specifics as to exactly, okay, this landowner has 100 miles of roads that still need to be improved. Well, then when you start looking at this sheet, this is when you'll start getting more detail on what exactly is you know taking place on those. But as far as the roll-up, you'll have this. Did that help?
So I think it's time to move from the staff report and go on to our next agenda item, which is the actual rulemaking that's proposed, so that if you want to, you can make a proposal about how we either adopt what the current proposal is or change it. We're kind of talking around that issue right now, so I think we need to move forward with that. So you want to review the rulemaking process for us, please, Mark?
Okay. So the next part of your packet is a recommendation by staff for the board to initiate rulemaking of rejecting staff of policy R103, and which we would schedule public hearings and present information for the public to review. Just again, in summary, the rulemaking, the proposed rule language reflects all of the recommendations that the board accepted last August, and it includes the opportunity for landowners to request an extension for up to 5 years beyond July 1, 2016. It includes establishing a process for which landowners will request an extension. Requires landowners to prepare and present a revised RMAP showing the remaining work that needs to be done. They also need to present a worst first and an even flow. It also offers a process, a 120-day process, for stakeholders to review the proposed extension and for the DNR to work with landowners on any concerns. It also, the 120-day process also offers landowners 30 days after the DNR decision to prepare their work plan on their anniversary date for the next year's work and to report the work that they've done. The rule, proposed rule, also clarifies that DNR will notify all stakeholders anytime a modification is made to an RMAP. In addition to that, staff has recommended the board direct staff to send out for part, as part of the review, the draft board manual, which shows those elements and the recommendations that are put into the board manual, including the communication process, reference to the necessary forms, and also the process to recognize when a landowner has completed their RMAP. So with that, any further discussion?
Sorry.
We should have a question.
So what was, did you recommend approval of the...
recommend that the board direct staff to file CR 102 to initiate rulemaking on the proposed rules and to attach the draft board manual for review as part of the rule packet.
All right, thank you. Sherry?
Is this timely to make suggestions or amendments to a portion of the rule?
We need to get the proposal on the table before we can amend it.
Okay.
I'd like to make that motion if there is one prepared. Is there?
There is. And I think staff is getting it up there, yeah.
Okay. I move that the Forest Practices Board approve for public review the draft rule proposal that amends WAC 222-24-050 and 222-24-051. This rule proposal provides landowners the opportunity to request an extension of the performance period for their road maintenance and abandonment plans. I further move to direct staff to file a CR 102 with the Office of the Code Revisor to initiate permanent rulemaking.
Second.
All right, thank you. We have a motion properly supported to adopt that rule. Other proposals? Amendment, if you want to make an amendment, now is an opportunity to do so.
I've actually talked with Mark and Darren both about this, so they know where I'm coming from. But on page 1, line 17 of the rule proposal, says how the landowners may request an extension. I'm proposing that we just insert how the landowners, large or small, may request an extension of up to 5 years. It's clear in the board manual, but it's not clear in the rule proposal.
And right above it, says the strategies are different for large and small. So that makes sense.
Right. I believe Board Member Fox is pointing out that the 051 is actually rule for large landowners, primarily for large landowners. There are, however, a number of small forest landowners, a little teeny number, but nevertheless, there are some small forest landowners who have opted to maintain an RMAP to complete the improvement of all of the roads up to the current forest and fish standards.
So was that a motion?
Mm-hmm.
Is there a second?
Second.
Thank you. We have a motion properly supported to amend. You want to put that amendment, that proposed amendment, in there, please? Patricia?
Yeah, what was the language?
Pardon?
What was the language that was used?
Well, you can just go to the rule proposal and look at line 17. And and after you see the date July 16th, however, comma, landowners, large or small, may request an extension. There's no difference in the language, just adding the large and the small to the statement.
Is it appropriate to put it in the proposed motion?
Well, I didn't think it was, but that's why I asked you a few minutes earlier if it was timely to suggest an amendment to the rule proposal.
So you're actually proposing a amendment to the proposed rule?
Yes, yes.
Right. As will they. Right.
Pardon?
And there'll be more.
Right. Yeah, we'll do the same.
The motion could still apply to amendments to the rule.
Language. Right. Can we put the rule language? Do you have the rule language there to put on the screen, please? So we have a proposed amendment to the rule language. It's right there on the screen for everybody to see. Line 17 inserts the three words large or small in front of landowners. This is a motion properly supported. Discussion on the motion. Norm.
Commissioner, just semantics more than anything else. Is it necessary relative to definitions in the forest practices rules to use the same terminology where it's large forest landowners and small forest landowners? And in terms of how it's written out, I don't know that it means anything. To me, I don't care, but I'd hate to see us get crosswise or something and have to change it again.
So I'm looking at my advisor here.
If you wanted to clarify it further, you could add forest after small.
Yeah.
Is that okay with you, Sherry? Doug, is that okay with you?
No.
He seconded it?
Yeah.
Okay, so this is just a little clarification. Sorry. All right, so now we have a slightly amended amendment, which is larger or small forest. Discussion on this motion.
I have a question about if this was approved, this amends the main motion?
No.
This amends the rule, the proposed rule.
But we have a
second
motion to amend the rule.
We have a motion to amend the rule, but we also have a motion to adopt the rule. So maybe we're going to have to rephrase it as amended. Is that what you're
pointing out? Yes, right. So we'd be amending the main motion.
So we're going to have to ask for the sponsors of the original motion about that.
Well, no, if we pass it, we've changed it.
Mm-hmm. But we might have to change the parent.
No, I see what you're saying.
The parent motion.
We've never adopted
as
draft
language.
So we'll get there. Let's make comment about this proposed amendment to the rule.
Sounds good.
Hearing no further, a call for vote. All those in favor, raise your hand, please. The proposed rule amendment. One, two, three. Okay, that's unanimous. Thank you. All right. Any other proposed amendments to the rule?
I want to propose the language changes that I handed out and highlighted in yellow.
And these would be in which section?
These would be in
section 5.
Yep. Let's see the section on page 2. Oh, yes, this would be, I'm sorry, in section 5.
So this gets to the heart of what staff was commenting on. Is it appropriate here in the RMAP section, or is it appropriate in the annual report?
This goes right to my comment earlier. This is in the RMAP section of the rule. So this language applies to the plan itself. That's our read of this. I'm not sure if that's the intent, but that's
so is your intent, Dave?
We would be satisfied with this type of approach as was handed out to be developed. That would satisfy our concerns.
And would can I then say and obviate the need for a rule change for your amendment?
No, I think that we feel like the language needs to be in the rule to be able to be backed up in the board.
So, but staff have recommended that we put it in subsection 8, so it's clear that it's relative to the report and not to the RMAP itself.
There could be both a reference in sub 8 and 9. One applying to the extension, one applying to annual reporting.
Otherwise, we get into the issue that Norm raised. Right. Would that be okay?
But we don't have that language.
Yeah.
Right.
Maybe we should.
Yeah, I'm wondering maybe if we continue this over lunch, maybe we could see if staff could come up with language, and we could look at that and see if it might work.
Paula?
So I just want to clarify and try to summarize what we're trying to do here. So if this language gets put into 8 and 9, what it means is that the form that you guys proposed and the intent that's in these proposed recommendations, which says those landowners who seek an extension will file an updated RMAP using common reporting requirements. So that was in the policy recommendations. That gets moved to 8. What it means is that anybody filing an extension will be required to use the new forms that you come up with that have standard reporting. And then if it goes into 9, then everybody who does annual reports, even people who are not filing for an extension, would also use standardized reporting, so information that comes in the annual reports will be the same from here on forward. So old RMAPs, people who are not filing for extensions, don't have to update the RMAP itself, but they do have new standardized reporting requirements. Right. And the people who are filing an extension have to file with that extension. Their RMAP itself needs the information that you are putting in the extension form.
That's correct.
So that's how
that would be the impact. Yes.
Right. And is that okay with?
As long as the language is clear,
I would support that.
So we have a suggestion to take a break now to allow staff to develop the appropriate language to amend those sections so that the intent that we've heard expressed here is affected. Okay. Staff clear on what the request is? All right, thank you. With that, we'll take a break for 1 hour and reconvene at 1:15. It's far better to put it off than to do it.
Yep, that's fine. Once you get the language straight, you're going to want to sort of start and do the page, so we still need to get a motion. Just to be clear about the process.
Well, I mean, yeah. So, and it's the
We usually do.
You predicted it? We'd be doing something at lunch.
Yeah.
Yeah, it just basically says you use standard format in the plan.
I said, Norm was going to ask you. I win.
I hope you won a lot.
Standardized forms. that's
correct. But that's the first substitution. Yeah, to you.
Oh.
So you're going to do that.
But if you wanted language, I would just put it in.
This is all worth it.
And then you can go back and
say, oh, good, you're on. And then say, instead of requiring
so make it required.
How's this looking? The department, and I just put brackets in there, require the use of standard wetland levels for landowners requesting an extension, so for sub-8 or for any supporting under sub-9 of this group.
Okay, that's great.
Thank you. Give me.
Thank you.
I have to run the garage for the
So when are you going to know about the mod flash?
Well, there is supposed to be a lot more, but
are you still a part of the vendor?
She's going to call me. So the other thing that I have So if you need
are we going in with Mayor Schell?
Otherwise, I'll see you back here a little
bit
Yes, not for him.
That's what all that meant. But no. Well, I guess.
Yes.
And then if you're, I'll see if you're still on the call when I get back.
I will be.
Okay.
Okay, well, that's fine. Okay, so that's good. But I'll
probably
good. Okay, great. I'm just the middle person.
I know.
That.
It's great.
Okay, so So that's fine. And, but I will start your secretary for August for the year, and you just do whatever you want.
Okay.
All right. But you know, it's one for the year, and then May or whatever.
Okay. Second. Thank you.
Yeah. All right. So one continues to that.
That's all right. So we're leaving the menu now. How?
Yeah. We're leaving the menu. Okay. They're not changing.
But I guess what I'm saying, if you do not have all of these elements in your revised don't you see that would be lacking or something? And you don't even report on these basic. We see these as basic elements.
They have to have.
So why are you afraid to say they must be put?
Because of the. It's making them do what they've already done.
Not just the extensions, it's for everyone.
But we're saying put it in 8 or 9, like you just said. For it to only apply to farm maps that are extended and the annual reporting. You said you're going to put this stuff in section 8 and 9.
Right.
And we're just saying that we ought, that it was supposed to, that we were thinking there would be this minimum basic elements that would be required in a common form. And we see these as basic elements.
Well, those are prioritization criteria, elements. That's the fundamental that we have in the interpretation of the recommendations in the rule. I sat on the policy group. I'm not going to let anybody say we're going to change the requirements around
You're saying already.
Well, it's incorporated into
their data
control. These are criteria by which you identify and schedule projects. Right? That's all they are. These are what's required.
Okay, if you want to see even
I know, we're not making an exception this time.
Well,
in my first talk, I emphasized the fact that we don't
do it. We can do it.
Well, but Donnell will do her own files. I'm not going to be mailing that out for rulemaking. That's just not, I mean, I don't file it. I don't, I mean, that's not, so that's it.
That we're trying to tweak in this rule
that possibly. The problem to the is there a human element?
That's what Dorn was also getting at as well.
Because we can prioritize on it, seems like
we
should be able to share that those.
Do we have to do another 30 day?
No. It's the one that's
well,
the
yeah, they
I know the level of detail and how
you've got to have the.
I have find the language, and I cannot.
You've got to send it over to the
level
service.
I mean, we're not saying what level of
detail. Right now, I need the 18th,
but you do it in the next one standardized
by noon.
So you're specifying how they could get everyone. But I guess we're July.
You're adding requirements, you're adding specificity.
You see the 2 weeks.
Included in an RMAP.
If you light 2 weeks, then at the end of July, we'll get even get materials.
We have not ever had a specificity, nor are we
That's an option. So I just need to know the possibilities. I mean, is it possible to meet the 18th deadline?
That
but it's not guaranteed. I mean, they have 2 weeks to turn materials around. I sent in a change last week to the analysis, and I haven't ordered tidying service. Well, I don't even know if I'm going into that detail.
Well, what I mean to say then is that, oh, by the way, this is...
Well, see, I told Shane to ask you. But we haven't had any problems, you know?
Technically, it goes that way.
Okay.
Yeah,
well, if you
start having problems, then
yeah.
It's on Mark.
Yeah.
It's on me. It'll be on me.
I just think, you know, you mentioned that it could possibly delay things. We may need to move the August meeting to September or something. So,
okay. Didn't think about that thing.
Don't go into all
the details. You guys are back here passing notes, aren't you?
Well, I was talking about that. Okay, is there going to be more rule changes? Or is this on or off? Oh, this has been on the whole time.